Hi, it's Diane, and it is Wednesday, the 25th of January. I'm here with the 1 o'clock group. So far, we have Jody and Tess. Let's start with a quick check-in and celebration. Who wants to go first?
I'll go first. We're holding steady. Celebration, you know what? It's a reminder that we need to do more of that. Celebrate some victories, but we're holding steady. My oldest just texted me yesterday that he was in the hospital getting tested for mono, and he in fact has mono. And I'll take his word that there was no other option but the hospital for that. And it didn't occur to him to like talk to us first. I don't know, kind of classic behavior. And I'm worried because he's sitting up in his dorm sleeping with mono. And then my daughter, her applications were completed January 15th, and we're waiting to hear, and we're getting pretty concerned, and I'm trying to keep a rein on my emotions as far as that goes. So that's where we are.
Yeah, it's hard to be on pins and needles when you're in this kind of, okay, we've done everything we can do, and now we just have to wait. It's a hard time to be in.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, awesome. Tess, what about you?
You know, things have actually been really good since our last call. I think I was kind of worried and anxious about them reengaging in their studies and prepping, studying for finals. And finals week ended last week, and they did such an incredible job. They've got all A's in all their academic classes. My ADHD son ended up getting a B in PE, and he's such an athletic, sporty guy. But what he'd forgotten to do was for a few weeks, and I'm guilty of not following up either, but he just didn't wear his PE uniform because he had left it at one of his buddy's houses, at home of his buddy, and forgot to pick it up. And then I didn't realize it was weeks later that he didn't have it. I don't know. To me, it doesn't make a lot of sense that that's why he was given a lower grade than he should have, because he otherwise participates. But I've got to let that go, and at least with the academics, I really can't complain. It's a big celebration, and I kind of just stepped back, and I followed through with them. I kept emotions in check, did the best I can with my own self-care, and made myself available for help or support as needed. And, as that thing, as your article says, they would just say, I've got it, don't worry, Mom. And I apparently they did. So something to celebrate.
Wow. Yeah. Well, and it sounds like, the whole dressing out thing in gym is a pretty common thing. I've got a kid in gym right now, and I'm always curious.
Okay.
Yeah. They don't dress out, they get marked. That's the only thing they really grade them on is whether or not
crazy.
They have their clothes. It's kind of
and I had no idea. Then it made me feel guilty that, oh my, why didn't I somehow follow through or look, but I, again, I just kept it up to him. And, I guess I have to also allow for consequences. And so hopefully he'll remember and know, that it is important.
Yeah. Well, and I think I'm tempted to kind of open Pandora's box there with that guilt test, I got to tell you.
I know. Well, that's that underlying stuff that I don't get. It's like when things are going well, even my husband mentioned it, why I tend to look at the negative and it's really bad. And it's not good because then it'll rub off on them somehow, and then make them, and I know it's me, but I don't like the fact that then if I've got that attitude, then I know it's got to somehow express and, be the tone, just bring out a negative energy in the home at times. And that's not
helpful. And it sounds like you consciously can see how it causes challenges. But if you're like most of us, it's not just that easy to stop thinking about negative stuff. How willing are you to take aim there today?
I'm really willing because it's not who I want to be. And I used to always think that I was such an optimistic, positive, bright, filled with light and, hope and, one to inspire. And yet, if I can't even do that in my own home, or if they're not seeing that, then it's you know, my husband would say something like, you're so sweet and great with all of your friends, and then, but why can't you be that way with us? And,
Yeah, well, it's not all the time,
but it's sometimes, you know, at times.
Yeah,
and obviously, I can let my guard down, you know, when things are, I guess, really bothering me or whatever, then I can just kind of let that guard down and, you know. I mean, I can act and stay in the real world at times. I can put on that smile and act as if everything's okay, but, you know, it's another thing to maybe feel stuff inside and then let that creep in and control, you know, my behaviors versus, okay, what's really going on here and why, you know, is there something I can do about it to change?
Well, and the simple answer is that it's a combination of you know, those gremlin voices in our head and low energy and, you know, the desire to do things well. So we tend to focus on the gaps, right? So it's kind of like if you've got, I mean, that's part of it, society, and part of it is personality, and part of it's a little bit of everything, which is kind of like if you've got seven things that are working and one thing that's not, our tendency is to focus in on shoring up that one thing instead of focusing on the seven that are working. And so you're in good company, and it's interesting that you feel like it's impacting the family. It might be a great place to take aim today, Tess.
Okay. Yeah, I would like to do that. Okay.
Jody, what about you? Where do you want to take aim?
It's a little bit of a tie-in, and it's fear. So I may not express it all the time, but I guess I'm afraid. I'm just afraid of the rug getting pulled out again, you know, whether it's my daughter not getting accepted to college or my son failing or not going to class for two solid weeks because he's sick and not getting the help he needs. It's that, you know, in my sane and mindful moments, I remember we're right here, right now. That's where we are, and that's what you deal with. But I struggle with the fear, and it's negative, and that's my big struggle right now.
So it's your fear specifically around your kids' performance. Is that right?
Yes.
Is there an area that you want to narrow in more? I don't know. It's sometimes when we do it really big, it becomes harder. Is there something specifically that you know you tend to worry about?
Well, I mean, maybe it's, I mean, it is the big stuff, which that in and of itself is the problem, because you can't solve that. I can't put us out 20 years and say, look, everyone's successful and happy and everything's perfect. That's not real. So I guess my problem is reining it back in, coming back to, okay, where are we now? What should I say, do, offer for help, instead of getting fearful and negative?
Okay, so catastrophized. So you're catastrophizing.
Yeah.
Is that fair?
Yes.
Okay. So I think both of these is kind of fun that you guys are focused on your own reactions, and I think that's a great place to talk, especially with today's topic. Did you guys already peek and see what the topic was today?
Yes,
I just know it's, yeah, don't take it personally.
Yeah, so the topic today is about not taking it personally. So this is kind of a really great framework to see whether part of what's going on for you guys with both of these, both the focusing on the negative and the fear and the catastrophizing is about taking it personally. And, you know, I think this is such a natural sort of thing, and it's an outshoot of a lot of components of our lives as parents of ADHD kids and complex kids generally, is the fact that, you know, when things don't go as planned or as preferred, we tend to shine the light on ourselves, right? So whether that's blaming ourselves or trying to jump in or taking responsibility, a lot of times we become self-focused. And I think it's with good reason, partly because we know we can control ourselves. A lot of times we feel like we have absolutely no control of our kids, so we've got to kind of keep the focus on us. But there's this underlying part of this that what goes on with our kids is somehow about us. And so if you've got a kid who's really frustrated and is talking back, or if you've got a kid who forgets to call you when they go to the emergency room, or if you've got a kid who gets a poor grade, even though you've worked really hard to try to help them not get poor grades, it's really easy to go, oh, this is, you know, this is about me, and look at how it is about you. And a lot of times what happens is that when we take it personally, like for the example they give here in the article that we wrote, is, you know, you've got a disrespectful child. If I say, ugh, how can they treat me like this? I deserve respect as a parent, and no child should treat their parent like this, and we get kind of, you know, social injustice about it. We're not really problem solving, right? Because we're focused on fixing the problem and making it stop. A lot of times we get triggered when we take things personally, or we get particularly emotionally engaged. And when we're emotionally engaged, our ability to problem solve slows down, right? So this goes back to the amygdala hijack that we always talk about, where, you know, when you're triggered, you go to that primal brain and all you can do is fight or flight. If you're overwhelmed and very stressful, then a lot of times what we tend to do is we tend to go back to our midbrain, which is more emotion-based and it's more habit-based. And so some of our bad habits our old habits show up, or our routines, the things we used to do all the time that we've tried to change or stop, tend to show up. And so what happens is that when we go into this place where we're taking everything personally and shining the light on everything, is that we stop problem solving. We stop focusing on our child. And what our kid probably needs at that moment is, you know, ask the question, what's going on here? How can I help? What can I do for my child? And if you're focused on you and how you're hurting or feeling, it makes it really difficult to do so. We tend to react instead of responding, and pointing fingers and all that other stuff. And so it ends up often in the hot mess instead of in really what our kids most need, which is how to figure out how to make it work. So I'm curious kind of what comes up for the two of you on this topic of taking it personally. Is there particular things you tend to take personally? Are there particular times that this is easier and more difficult? What are your thoughts?
Well, I think you are right on. And that's so, yeah, funny, because just yesterday, I had that thought, oh my gosh, why is my son being so disrespectful? My younger son, you know, he comes home from school and here I am, you know, wanting to just provide a snack, you know, a healthy snack for him. And, you know, I'm talking to him nicely and offering up stuff. And yet he was, I forget what he was saying, but he was just kind of like on edge and not, you know, like kind of short. And it was just, I mean, I can't even remember it exactly how, but I really felt like, I felt hurt because I just felt like, gosh, you know, I'm just trying to be a loving parent and you know, I'm here supporting you and caring for you, and yet you're disrespecting me. And I did very much take it personally. And I just, you know, and I don't know, what did I say? Said something to the point, like, you know, how dare you talk back to me like that or speak to me like that? It's very disrespectful. Yeah, and it's just, but then, of course, then that creates a whole, you know, and I know that wasn't healthy and wasn't the right thing, and yet I had already been triggered, and I allowed myself to get emotional about it and take it personally. And, you know, then it goes, you know, then it can easily bring me back, like, you know, for all the, you know, all the things I ever, you know, do, it's, you know, and I do it, you know, my intentions are out of love and all that, but then why is he treating me like this? You know, I don't deserve this type of thing. That's how I start to feel. Then I make it about me. It's like, why? Yeah. And yet I know deep down, it's like, okay, somehow something's going on in him that's making him a bit irritable or impatient or just, you know, not in a good mood for some reason. And I didn't even zero in on that. I think I was just too, I was overwhelmed with other things at that time, and I guess I couldn't really zone in on problem solving. And so this is a good topic for me today.
Well, and I think that's, I mean, you described it beautifully, and it happens to a lot of us. So you're, you know, you're really in good company, but it's that sort of, how do you stop it and how do you check in on it? Jody, what do you think?
Yeah, similarly, my daughter came home yesterday, and there's a piece she needs to submit for a scholarship. So this is for art school, and apparently it failed, but she didn't tell me. In the meantime, her most important thing that she wanted to talk to me about was the social plans for Saturday night that I'm ultimately going to say no, it's not okay. You know, it's beyond our boundaries for this sleepover birthday party thing.
And I'm having this conversation with her, like, okay, let's not talk about that right now. Let's talk about this art piece that you were counting on. It's due in 2 weeks. You know, what's your plan? And I was feeling really frustrated, like, I'm frustrated because of her priorities. And I'm frustrated that, like, why is this falling on me? I'm, you know, a little bit resentful. I didn't say a whole lot. She knew I was frustrated at her response on doing the artwork. And I've got this fear of she doesn't set priorities, she doesn't manage her time properly. And I'm keeping that inside because I think that's pretty negative and hurtful. But I was just really frustrated. And I guess I took it personally in the sense that why is this all up to me?
Yeah. So as you look at it right now, what if it was about you? What if it really was about you, and what if it was really about her?
Well, I guess the part about me is my fear. Her asking to do something that she's, you know, of course anyone can ask, right? There's mm-hmm. nothing inherently wrong with that. I felt like she was playing me a little bit, like distracting me so she could get her way with this social plan. I don't know. I have a heart. It gets meshed. And the only thing I can say that was good about it is I held my tongue. I didn't. You know, and I didn't say yes, I didn't say no, but this is hard stuff for me.
Right. Well, and so there's a couple of pieces that kind of come up for me on this is that, you know, one is this whole bumping up against your fear, right? So whenever anything pushes our fear or one of those core kind of those core emotions, we get triggered and we tend to go into that sort of defensive, fight or flightish sort of thing, which is part of what happened is that something happened, you sensed, you know, it's almost like you smell fear like an animal does in the woods, right? Oh, wait, this
yeah.
is that thing again, right? And then
yes.
you kind of go into this, and you're like, okay, I'm on guard now. And you're like, oh, what's going on? And you're like, and it becomes all about you because you're in protection mode. And then
right.
the other piece of this is kind of like, she's playing me, she's manipulating me. And I guess, you know, whether that's true or not, it kind of takes me back to the naughty versus neurological. If you kind of, we go with me there and
yep.
and say, well, so what? You know, so it's like, okay, so if assuming she's playing you or she's trying to manipulate you, how would you handle it? And assuming she's just trying to get what she really wants, which is most of what most of us want, is we want to have a little bit more control in our life. We want to get what we want to get. You know, how
yeah.
do you look at it? How do you look at it both ways, and which way feels like a more effective way of responding to your kid who ultimately is asking for something?
Well, I think, you know, when I imagine myself doing my best parenting, I would be very calm and just say that that's not okay with us. These are our rules, and we're not okay with it. And I appreciate that you're frustrated at the no, but that's the way it goes. And not engage, not get into a verbal battle about it. I don't know how she's going to react when she hears no, but I have some ideas of how she's going to react. But so I guess I would just calmly, and I don't know what the proper word is, but, you know, what our boundaries are our boundaries, and we have to stick to them.
Well, and so is it about, so I guess the question is when you say that. So what's coming up for me is kind of the, even when we just, put our foot down as parents, we miss an opportunity.
Okay.
Because I think that's there's almost like a continuum. So the far end of the continuum is I'm going to take it personally and it's all about me. The middle of the continuum is I'm going to put my foot down and put my boundaries in. The other end of the continuum is really how can I connect with my child in this moment and how can I help them? What does my kid need right now? So
okay.
When that happens, does your daughter need a boundary? Does she need an affirmation? What does she really need? And maybe it is a boundary.
I think in this case it is a boundary. Honestly, you know, there was a, she's a senior. There were a good solid 2.5, 3 years of no social life. So probably we've in the past been like, okay, you know, you go do this because this is an opportunity for you to be social. And we appreciate what a loss it's been that she hasn't had that social life. But now, you know, I'll tell you what it is. She's saying that she and her friends want to spend the night in a hotel room. It's all okay with this other person's mom. Like, no. It just seems like there's absolutely nothing good that could happen there. So it's legitimate. It's a legitimate boundary. And my so in the past, I would have had this internal argument with myself, like, oh, I feel bad. You know, she never gets to go do anything with her friends. And that's not the case anymore. And I have to, I think it's just straight up needs a boundary.
Yeah. So how do you skip over the taking it personally and move into action?
Well, so the me feeling like I'm being manipulated, it doesn't really help the situation. So, you know, I guess just to have a calm conversation about what's okay with us and what isn't. As opposed to feeling like she's trying to take advantage of me or manipulate or whatever.
So how is that easy to remember, or is that just a practice to get into? What do you think is going on there for you?
I think it's a practice. It's, you know, my husband tends to be really strict. I'm somewhere in the middle, but I probably lean the other way because, again, all of the stuff, the not having a social life, there was a lot of depression and anxiety that she struggled with the last couple of years, much better this year. But so I'm always like, oh, I feel so sorry for you. Oh, I feel so bad for you. But that I have to think before I talk, and I have to come back and say, what's appropriate here? What's best for her? It's best that she doesn't put herself in a situation where she's getting in trouble. And that's, you know, her short-term disappointment, I have to be okay with that.
So is there a fear attached to her short-term disappointment that's hard to let go of?
Yes.
So what's the fear?
Absolutely. Yes. That stress, anxiety, depression really hit a climax 2 years ago, and or a year and a half, I guess. And it was scary. And I don't want to go back there. And we were kind of dancing on eggshells prior to that. So that's, it's fear, yeah.
Yeah, of course it is. And it's scary because you've been there before and you remember what it felt like. And it was really terrifying to have a kid in that place.
Yeah.
So is this about remembering that you're resourceful and you'll know if it gets bad enough that you need to step in? Is this about remembering what also might be true? What's going to help you manage that fear?
Well, that, yeah, the first thing you said is powerful because we did learn a lot and she's learned a lot. And we've had a lot of really good conversations about how to deal with emotion and anxiety. And if I can remember that, it would alleviate the fear.
Because here's the thing about worry, right? Because what we're doing when we worry about something that possibly might happen in the future, I mean, there's some probability that that's going to happen. And there's also some probability that you'll have significant signals that that's heading that way before it gets there. The other piece of it is that there's also some probability that something more positive and more favorable will happen. And so it's about kind of almost conditioning the mind to focus on the thing. If you don't know what's going to happen, focus on the stuff that makes you feel better. That's the trick.
Right.
So
give me an example.
Okay, so it's the thought that might feel a little bit better than, you know, what's the current thought? What's the fear thought?
Okay, that I say no, and she has a panic attack and a meltdown. And
okay.
It spirals, I guess.
Okay. All right. So what also might be true?
That she accepts the no. She's disappointed, and she goes off and processes it, which is
okay.
Also very likely. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And what would you need to set yourself up for success to maybe lean the balance towards she'll accept the feedback and not towards she'll have a panic attack?
Well, you know, again, what you said before, realizing that we've got some tools now, that if the worst thing happens, we can handle it, that's powerful. And, you know, maybe even further that this too shall pass.
Mm. Yeah, because even if she does lose it for a few minutes, you know, or maybe it's about
right.
knowing whether there's certain times of day that she tends to be more triggered. I stepped into it with my daughter this morning because I had a conversation with her first thing in the morning that she just is never ready for the first thing in the morning. And I knew better, right? And so if I would have said, hey, I want to talk to you after school about X, it might have been okay, but I stepped right into it. And we do that. So, again, what do
right,
you know?
Right, because it's convenient for us. Yeah.
Exactly. It's like, I want to talk about it now. It's on my mind.
Right. Well, you know, in fact, when she first broached it with me, I did say this isn't a good time. It wasn't a good time for me. I was stressed, and I knew that it wouldn't be good. And I know that, yeah, I definitely can tell you when her good times and her bad times are. So I can, you know, time it.
Yeah. So I want to kind of hear, Tess, what's going on for you as we're talking about this.
Okay. I agree that, you know, we have, the same or similar type situations too with both of our kids with setting boundaries. And, you know, like I get into that mode too of fear, like, gosh, all he ever seems to think about is his social life. And he does have he has a pretty good social life. And yet there are times where, like, just this past week, I'm like, okay, he's asking to go to a concert tonight, and then he's got his winter formal this weekend. And in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, he should be focusing on preparing for his ACT exams, you know, because he's really fallen off of that and hasn't been doing anything now for the past, I don't know, month and a half or so, and yet the test is coming up. Or why isn't he working on his Boy Scout Eagle project, you know, and instead he's like, he's in this mode of really, you know, focusing on social life and being out there. And I'm thinking, I mean, it's so hard to know. And it's not, and we've set down, I mean, a lot of the fear that I have personally with him being social and going to certain events is, you know, the temptation for, you know, drinking or, you know, smoking weed or, you know, doing something, you know, getting sex or doing something. That I just feel he's not, yeah. I mean, of course, the first two are illegal, and he's definitely underage still. But then, at the same time, my husband and I, we went to this event over the weekend on reality parties and what happened. You know, I guess I don't really need to go into the full story, but we had a nice, we sat down and had a nice talk over dinner with both of our boys about, you know, again, I mean, it's not our first talk, but again, bringing up that uncomfortable issue of alcohol and drugs and, you know, and what that can lead to and, you know, and so forth. And I thought that was very productive. And, you know, so just, I mean, I think for us, as long as we can set a foundation, let them know what our boundaries are, what our expectations are, what is not going to be tolerated or acceptable in the home. And at the same time, we're going to continue to love them, you know, and be there for them, support them, you know, in any way. It's just trying to keep, we reminded them as well that, you know, we want to, you know, keep the lines of communication open. And, you know, we hope that, you know, we really want to work on our relationship with them. And, you know, if there's something that's troubling them or bothering them, you know, that we would hope that they could feel comfortable turning to us. But, you know, but we had to, but yeah, we had to like say no or say yes under these conditions, you know, over things that happened or that are about to happen. And yes, he would be upset and like, oh, there's no way I'm going to have my dad drive and sit with us at a concert. But then it ended up that, it ended up that he didn't have to do that. But I liked the way how my husband and I kind of stood our ground, but then didn't over, it is a tricky issue. And I'm glad to know that I'm not the only one.
Let me ask you, so it sounds like you've had a similar experience. So I guess my question for you is, how does this idea of taking it personally and the challenge of catastrophizing tie into your tendency to focus on what's not working instead of what is working?
I'm sorry, my mind kind of went elsewhere, and I guess I was going off topic. But yeah, I have taken it personally. Like, you know, here we are trying to, well, he hasn't done anything bad yet. I mean, not that we're aware of, but, you know, in my mind, I'm thinking, well, he should know better, or he should know that, you know, that it's not healthy for a bunch of teenagers to go out on, you know, midweek to a concert, you know, and drive on their own, or, you know, and how can you even think about doing that? You know, but then he's like, well, there's not, you know, we're not even doing anything in school right now, and we just finished our rough finals week, and, you know, and so, then, you know, then I start to feel bad, like, well,
yeah,
gee, maybe I should be a little more, understanding, and, you know, can
so
we
Tess,
put
let's
scaffolding
take,
around?
Take,
okay.
Yeah, let's take aim on a specific example and kind of play it out if you're willing to.
Okay.
So give me an example of a time when you tend to focus on what's not working.
Yesterday. That was the other thing he mentioned. He goes, I'm going to go to a basketball game, you know, high school basketball game, and it's one of those important games where, well, it's a special game because it's a big rivalry, and it's always sold out, and all the kids, and, you know, I mean, not all the kids, but it's a popular one to go to. Now, in my mind, I was thinking, why can't he use this time to study and do homework? And yet he'll tell me he doesn't really have anything going on right now. But in my mind, well, that's if you're just focusing straight on school. But what about, you know, like I said, the ACT or the, you know, working on an Eagle project? So then I brought it up. Okay, I'll let, you know, because he had already bought the ticket. And I said, well, you know, what about homework? And he said, well, I don't really have anything. I don't have anything. And then I said, well, what about your, you know, I mentioned the fact that he's got his ACTs coming up and he hasn't been studying. He goes, well, he goes, yeah, you're right. He goes, I need to focus on that again, or I need to start, you know, thinking about that and working on that. And then I brought up the Eagle Project. I'm just like, I'm wanting him to be aware that there are other things that he could be focusing on, but I wasn't forcing him to do that right now. I did give him the freedom to go and to that basketball game. And that's not all he did yesterday. I mean, he did spend time also, you know, going out and getting some fresh air and working on his golf skills, which I think is very important as well.
So Tess, how are you holding him accountable to work on his SAT practice and his Eagle?
Well, that's all I did yesterday. And so I'm thinking, okay, now what's appropriate going forward? Because now that, you know, social event is over, he is going to go to that concert tonight. He's got they've got a special driver, an adult going with them. So they're not going to be driving on their own, and they're just going to, yeah. I'm okay with that now. But how do I? Yeah, I don't know what appropriate.
Because
it sounds like there's a gap there,
which is kind of, you're expecting him to kind of prioritize this among something that doesn't have a deadline. And I guess the question is, how realistic is it that he's going to go, oh, here's 17 things I might do instead with this time. How do I decide whether, you know, there's schoolwork is clearly, he's clear on what his homework is and he knows what that is and where the priority fits. But it sounds like there's some opportunity to really get more clear on some deadlines and things around the other two things.
Yeah, and I'm guilty of not sitting down and going over with that with him. So I guess I should sit down with or find out on my own, okay, what upcoming, you know, ACT exams could he possibly be ready, you know, when would he be ready to take the next one or whatever, then find out those dates and then sitting down with him and maybe scheduling on his calendar with him or, you know, a time, wouldn't that be appropriate? Like, you know, can we arrange, how can we, how can we, you know, start preparing for this? You know,
well, and I think the what it is kind of like, and how much he drives it versus how much you drive it is something you guys have to figure out is who's in the driver's seat. You know, is it look like, buddy, I'd love, you know, you brought up the fact that you need to kind of get on top of the ACT studying, and I would, and I think part of it is having some structure and some clear deadlines for yourself. You know, what do you think about coming back and sharing a plan with me or coming up with a plan and making sure you've got something scheduled and just kind of, again, at every step we want to ask permission. At every step we want to try to put them in the driver's seat.
So can I, like if I just said, can I sit down with you and lay out a plan or see how we can, yeah.
So what would the least level of scaffolding look like, Tess? What's the least level of scaffolding you think you could put out there for him?
Well, for me to know what the next the date of the next exam and just to remind, you know, let him know, well, this exam is coming up. Would you be prepared to take that test? And if not, what would we know? How
so hang on a second. Let me take you back.
Okay.
So what would it look like for him to do 100% of this and you hold him accountable for it?
Oh, me just reminding him that he needs to prepare and study for an upcoming ACT exam.
So I guess I'm curious. So
but that could mean like a next month, or that could also mean like, well, he doesn't have to really take
exactly.
one until like later this summer.
Exactly.
Or, you know, and it's like if I leave
right.
it up to him, then he'll put it off and put it off. So
I want to start from there because you've got one end of the spectrum, which is let's us sit down right now and I'll help you come up with a plan is
okay.
one end of the
okay.
spectrum. You saying, okay, good luck. Let me know how it goes. To
yeah.
the other end of the spectrum. Where do you think the right balance point is to hold him accountable for what he can and to
having
and
him choose a date?
Him.
Yeah. I think the next step would be having him choose a date of when he, you know, would like to take his ACT exam and then following through, you know, reminding him or how he plans to prepare for that.
Great. So you're going to ask.
I mean,
right,
there's
a, say, is it going to, you're going to ask him to choose a date.
Select a date.
And then
yeah.
you're going to ask him how you can hold him accountable for creating
okay.
a plan for getting ready.
Okay.
So that's a step. This side of scalp, because you know he's not going to do it on his own, but you know that if you hold him accountable for it, that can help him to be more successful independently.
Okay. Got it.
How does that sound different to you than what you start where you started?
Well, I feel a lot more confident that it'll get done, or something will at least get started. You know, he'll be headed in the right direction. At least he's got some support there, and yeah, he's going to be made accountable for it. If he selects, at least if he, yeah, I'm giving him the choice of selecting the date, and then obviously too, it's like if he doesn't choose something that's way down the line, then maybe I need to revisit or reassess. But I think realistically, if anything, the next few months I think would still be appropriate. And then See, I'm so, it's so much harder for me because I'm not a natural planner. I'm not, he's not even the one with ADD. I'm the one with ADD. And so this has never come naturally for me to be able to sit down and plan things out. I've always been last minute. So I just feel like I'm such a poor role model. And I mean, I can't tell him how to set it up. And when I do, it always just seems forced. And, you know, I seem to be such a, I don't know, it doesn't feel right or doesn't seem right. But
well, of course
somehow
you have
he's
doubts,
been able
but it's
to
not,
do it.
When it's not your skill set, I mean, it makes sense that you would have doubts, when it's not your natural skill set. And what it sounds like you ultimately want to do is to set your kid up for success so that he can plan.
Yeah, I want him to plan and do the right thing.
So what?
But motivating him to do it, or I guess I have to. He may not ever be motivated. I guess I have to. I mean, waiting for self motivation for him to be that independent may not be realistic. It's probably not realistic. But if I sit down with him or let him know that, you know, let him choose the date of the next exam and then how I can be of help, how can I keep him accountable, I guess would just is the next logical step.
Yeah. Yeah. How does that feel?
It feels good. Yeah.
Okay. Jody, anything?
I can do that.
Jody,
well,
anytime.
I was just taking notes like crazy there because that's so helpful. So I've got the one in college with ADHD, and he's sitting in his room sleeping with mono. He's going to miss class. And my first instinct is to lecture him about, oh, you're going to have to make sure you get notes and stay caught up and whatever. And rather than doing that, I'm going to ask him, you know, if he needs my help, should we contact the student services people? Do you want me to do that? And ask rather than jump and get fearful.
Right. And maybe it's even a step, you know, challenge yourself to stretch to as independent as possible. You know, so if he were to do it all himself, what are the steps he would have to take? He'd have to figure out what needs to be done. He'd have to figure out when he was going to do all the things that needed to be done, and he'd need to take action. Yeah, so
right. That's
actually three things that need to happen. And so if you say, okay, so what's realistic? What of that can he do independently? If, you know, can he come up with a list himself? Can he do it once the list is there? Can he schedule time to do it once the list is there? You know, so it's kind of like you're thinking through what all the steps are, and then you're saying, what of this can he do alone? Where are his executive function challenges? And where do I need to scaffold? So what kind of comes up for you, Jody, as I'm saying that?
Okay, so we identified that he has a really hard time. He procrastinates.
Yep.
So his executive function challenge is getting started. So I would also say he has a hard time identifying what needs to be done. I don't really know where that falls on the EF challenge thing, but
how open is he to your involvement in those steps? Does he realize that it's a problem for him and so he's willing for you to engage, or is he pretty reserved about it?
In the past he's been very pushback, you know, put no mom, no. But we did, you know, after the debacle with last semester, he was open to reading the stuff about ADHD, about going to student services to set up. He's got weekly appointments. So I would say he is more open. And I think the trick is for me to reference back to, you know, what he discovered about himself without being too lectury, and then asking him my first instinct to say, what do you think you need to do in order to manage this illness in school?
That's a really open, great question as a start of figuring out whether he knows what the steps are.
Right.
What do you think? How do you think he's going to respond?
I'm afraid that he's going to say, I got this.
Okay. So have you ever read the article? So I wrote an article
yes,
called What to Do with Your Kids Says
yes.
I Got This, right?
Yeah.
So what would be the next? Right. So how do you kick in? What's the next level of scaffolding to put in there?
I think I need him to identify what he has.
Great. So you say, what specifically would you say to him when he says, Mom, I got that?
To share with me what his next step is?
Yeah, great. I know that this is a really important thing for you. So what are your next steps? Yeah, and just kind of...
And so offering to provide that scaffolding when he identifies that he has the need
mm-hmm.
for help.
Yeah, and I think that there's this fine dance, right? Because you want to hold him, you want to help him to be accountable, and you want to, you want him to be as independent as possible. So maybe it's great. When can I check back in and make sure you've got what you need? Or maybe it's great. Why don't we, talk tomorrow and make sure you're doing okay on the stuff you need to do? Or is it great, let me know if you need my help. So it's kind of that figuring out what that follow-up step is for you that's going to make you feel comfortable and is going to help him to feel independent.
Right.
So in this instance, with the stuff with school, what feels like that balance between independence and security for you?
I think that if I'll feel better if he identifies that he needs to work with the student services office and whatever tutoring's in place so that he doesn't fall behind.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that one of the things that is, and I don't know if this would work for you or not, Jody, but one of the things for me that is helpful with my kid is if I acknowledge my own vulnerability and my own fears. And say, buddy, after what happened last semester, I'm a little bit gun shy. And I got to tell you, I'm working on it and trying to set you up for success and let you be as independent as possible. And right now that means I'm in a little bit of a cautious place. What do you think about giving me a little bit more details than you normally would as we kind of work through this transition? Or something like that that kind of just says, hey, I'm a little, after what happened, I'm a little gun shy.
I think that's great.
How would that change things between the two of you?
I think that for me to be honest about how I feel about it would make him open up a little bit more. And he's empathetic. I think, we had a tough time, and I think he realizes that. So I think that if I'm open about my fears, then he'll be more open to having this conversation and working with me.
Cool. Awesome. So I'm going to move us into our wrap-up, if you don't mind, and I'm going to turn to page 39. So I don't know if you guys are on your workbook, but let's take a minute and kind of answer our last four questions. What did I focus on or pay most attention to today? We were talking about not taking it personally, but there may have been something else that and that caught your eye, or it may have been a particular situation in a particular kid. What's my clarity or takeaway? What aha did I have? What's a realistic action step for me to take? And how do I set myself up for success with this action? So jot down a few notes, and I would love to hear from both of you, at least an aha and an action step.
Well, I would say I've got a couple. I would say that... when you talked about, my fear and my worry, whether it's my son or my daughter, that there's a probability that something bad can happen, but it's also possible that nothing bad will happen. And if I focus on the positive, knowing that I can be resourceful, knowing that she can be resourceful, it's going to be a lot more fruitful. It's going to be a lot calmer conversation. And so
my plan is with her to, when it comes up and she asks again to do this social thing and I say no, I'm going to keep that in mind.
Awesome. Love that.
And then the other big thing was, and it just apparently needs to be hit over the head with me, the scaffolding, constant scaffolding. And, you know, you want them to be independent. I've said it before, you know, my first instinct is to swoop in and handle it. But if you said every step, ask them what they need from me. So when I talk to my son about school, I'm going to go at it from that angle.
Yeah. Awesome. Love that. Cool. Tess, what about you?
I initially, was focusing on my negativity and what's wrong versus all the good things that are happening in my life, and knowing that, when I focus on the negative or the imperfections, then it does have an impact on my family. And I think one of the biggest things is that, first of all, I can't take things personally. But I think that there's also an action step there that I've forgotten that, well, okay, it's one thing to not take it personally or maybe to step back, but it's another thing to, okay, what do I really need to focus on? And zoning in on, okay, why is my son behaving this way? And so somehow, you know, putting the focus back on him, you know, in a positive way, like how can we get down to what it is that's, you know, really troubling him that creates this behavior that I seem to find disrespectful and take personally and feel hurt by.
You can stay in that place of curiosity, and I don't know when you need to remind yourself to be curious.
That's
kind
the
of
word,
like,
yeah.
Hey, what's really going on? What's going on? What's making it hard? What is, you know, my kid's having a hard time right now. What is it that's going on?
Yeah. Okay.
So what's your concrete action?
Concrete action is to. Well, I like what Jody was saying. You know, I need to provide more scaffolding too, because I guess I tend to go to the extreme of, okay, I'm either controlling them and telling them, okay, no social events, you're going to sit down and do this today, now, or, you know, whatever. Or okay, fine, you've got it, you're in control of it, but then not really following through or somehow making them accountable. But I like that first step, I'm going to ask them, well, when would you like to take that next ACT, or when are you going to take the ACT exam, and is it too general for me to then say, how can I hold you accountable for that or to that?
How do you think that would play out if you did it?
If I did say that, I don't know. He may just say, I've got this, and, you know, I don't need any, you know, I've got it covered and I don't need any help. And then if he says that, well, I guess I could just say, okay, well, if there's anything you need, because he also has, I could let him know that he has an opportunity if he needs a tutor or, you know, needs someone to help them aside from myself, then that would be available to him. But then maybe then checking back at the end of the week or after a few days and say, how's your ACT studies going, or, you know, how's that going? Following through a few days later.
So
versus waiting another week or two.
Right, and I think that's the piece of it is, like, if you go back to, so whenever you hold them accountable, it's kind of like, what's your follow-up? How soon are you going to follow up? How long, you know, how long of a rope do you want to give them to be independent?
So it's like 2-3 days appropriate. I'm thinking, you know, versus every day, okay, well, you know, what are you doing today? Because I mean, in my mind, I'm thinking that's something that he should be working on. You know, even 20 minutes, can we do it for 20 minutes a day? You know, that's like some advice that I get from people. It's like even just sitting down and working on 3 problems a day, you know, 3 math problems, 3 reading problems, or what, you know, something like that. That should be realistic. But and maybe I need to ask him if that would be something that he can do. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, and you're going to play with
setting,
it.
Or setting
like
a time
thing,
frame.
Like,
yeah.
You know. Right. This is a marathon, not a sprint. And what you're trying to do is to increase the accountability. which will help you to decrease the, you know, the focusing on what's, you know, the negative and not,
yeah,
you know, what's working. And so I think that there may be, I guess Tessa's other question is there a specific challenge you want to give yourself around your tendencies around negativity? Is it about, you know, going back and listening to that positivity module? Is it that 3-to-1 ratio where you always are putting praises in? Is it gratitude? I mean, what is it that you want to kind of add into the mix here, if anything?
Well, I've tried that, you know, it's funny, I've tried that, yeah, having that attitude of gratitude. And I said there was a reminder on my phone daily to remember that, because I will, I'll tend to focus on the 1% that's not good, or, you know, the one thing that's not good versus all the good things. Okay, so you said there's a module, I mean, going back on the module on positivity.
Yeah, going back and listening to one of the, I mean, just if you went back and listened
yeah, I mean,
to
I'm
the
asking
call
you,
on positive parenting.
Yeah, I mean, okay, so I'm willing to do that. I think that's like where I'm at, where it's like, okay, I need some guidance. Okay, what is available out there that I could tangibly, you know, look at or read?
So
or,
I would go,
you
could go back and listen to our call from November where we did talk about parenting positively.
Okay.
That might be a place to start.
Okay.
That's a place to start.
Okay, that sounds good.
Awesome. And always feel free to post a message on Facebook if you want other ideas from folks in terms of other ways to put positivity first. But
Okay.
Awesome. All right, ladies. We are next week is a Lifeline call on Thursday evening at 8 p.m. And this group will meet again in 2 weeks on the 8th of February. I can't believe it's February already.
Yeah.
All right. Take care, ladies.
Sounds
talk
great.
You
thank you. Thanks so much, Diane. Thank you,
thank
Jody.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
Thanks. Bye, Tess. Right. Bye, Diane.
Bye-bye. Thanks.
The moderator has left the conference. The conference is now completed. Goodbye.